court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Happy birthday.
What?
Well, kind of.
What do you mean? Oh, for the podcast.
Yeah.
I thought you meant me. Don't make me older. I just had a birthday a month or so ago.
I don't need
another one.
This is court appointed.
Hell, I'm going
birthday.
Downhill fast.
We released our very first episode, the Pokemon Go episode, on July 25th. So this is
this one will be released on the 24th. So that's about as close as we can get without being there, huh?
Yeah. So this is like court appointed birthday eve.
Well, the court appointed is 1 year old.
Yep.
It's still crawling. It's not walking yet.
What do you get for your 1 year anniversary? Is it like paper or something?
A rock, I think.
A rock?
Yeah. Somebody throws a rock through the window and tells us to shut up.
Well, it's been a fun year, though. We've covered a lot of interesting topics.
Yeah. I learned a lot of stuff.
Have you?
Sure.
I've learned a few things, too, actually.
Well, you're supposed to be learning the rest of us.
Well, no, you learned me some other stuff. Like how to talk good.
How to talk good?
Yeah.
I think, though, my favorite part is when people write in and talk about how they were able to use something that they heard in the podcast, whether in their business or in some type of legal matter that came up, they knew something about it, or even if it was just answering a question at a trivia night or something, when people have written in and told us how that was helpful. I think that's my favorite part out of
it. Yeah, absolutely. Like whenever you put something out there and it helps people in their lives, that's a good feeling.
Yeah. So. I mean, we're not just here talking to hear air running out of our heads. We're trying to do some good in some manner or another.
Air running out of our heads. I've never heard that phrase before.
Well, that's what it is technically.
Maybe. I don't know. I think there's something about vocal cords and vibrations. And
it's still air running out of your head that's making the vocal cords work.
Okay. I guess. I'll you're the thespian, so I'll leave that to you.
That's right. I am a thespian.
Well, so this is our episode 53, and this is going to be the start of season 3.
Season 3?
Yeah.
Why isn't it season 2?
We already had season 2.
Oh, when the audio boom season.
No, we started season 2 like a long time ago, but it wasn't really like set in stone.
Well, so. I thought that season 1 was while we were independent, and then season 2 was starting on Audio Boom.
No, I think season 2 started in 2017 in January. I think we said it was season 2.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
I forget things a lot.
Yeah, and I'm just arbitrarily saying season 3 is starting today.
So we're on our 1 year anniversary starting season 3. We can't get any more confusing than that.
Episode 53, season 3.
How does that happen? Yeah. It's not dog years because they're longer.
Court appointed, the next generation.
Well, to frontiers and beyond, whatever, to places where no one dares goes before.
To boldly go where no dude has gone before.
There you go. That's what I was looking for, but stumbling badly.
I'll pick up what you're putting down. This episode is on a legal theory, or actually it's more of like a courtroom rule of procedure that is understood by everyone, but really not really understood much about it.
Okay. It's understood by everyone, but understood by no one. Is that what you're saying?
Kind of. Yeah. It's called invoking the rule.
Invoking the rule.
Yeah. Do you have any idea what that is?
Well, that kind of reminds me of something my dad would have said when we were little. I'm invoking the rule. Y'all better straighten up. I'm going to reach back there and start swatting, and whichever one I hit's going to get it. But I wasn't doing anything. Well, that's all right. You probably deserved it for something else.
Hey, Mr. Smurl, can I have another root beer? No, I'm invoking the rule.
That's right. I'm invoking the root beer rule. And a little six-year-old Michael turns around and comes over and says, "Hey, Tommy, I asked your dad for a root beer, and he said no. And I don't think he was joking."
I couldn't tell. Your dad had that weird sense of humor.
So. He does have that dry look, whether he's being dead serious or joking. You can't tell. It's the same look.
Is that called inscrutable?
Or dry humor or something like that. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, but, invoking the rule is something that takes place in probably every single trial, actually.
Okay.
Which is kind of funny because you have to invoke it. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. But it almost happens automatically anyway because everyone always says it. So... basically,
now I'm really confused.
Well,
building this mystery up good because I have no idea what you're talking about. Invoking the rule, and somebody always says it, but if they don't say it, it's going to happen anyway because it always happens.
So the procedure is called invoking the rule, and it's a rule of civil procedure that allows a party to request that all witnesses be prevented from hearing the testimony of other witnesses in the trial. So basically, the intent is to prevent other witnesses from
being influenced
by
other
witnesses'
testimony.
Yeah, it makes total sense, doesn't it?
Sure, sure. You sequester the witnesses.
Yeah. The legal way to say exactly what I just said, and this is in a case, is avoid the coloring of a witness's testimony by that which he has heard from other witnesses. And that comes from a 1961 Florida case.
Huh. Seems like it'd be further back than that.
Well, it does go farther back, and I'm going to get into that. So.
Well, good.
We're going to go
through. I want to know. Inquiring minds and all.
There's some other way to describe it is basically this Mendoza v. State case, which is another Florida case from 2012. It says, when prevented from hearing the testimony of other witnesses, witnesses cannot mold their testimony to emulate or contradict testimony of previous witnesses. So, as you can see, it's kind of like one of those, like, duh theories.
Yeah.
It's like, makes perfect sense.
Absolutely.
The Supreme Court has even weighed in on this, invoking the rule, and it says basically that the aim of imposing the rule on witnesses, as the practice of sequestering witnesses is sometimes called, is twofold. It exercises a restraint on witnesses, and it aids in detecting testimony that is less than candid. And that was from a 1976 case.
So let me ask you this, just for clarification. Is this something that when they start a trial, somebody has to declare that they want all the witnesses to be kept out of the room when other witnesses are testifying, or is this just understood? That's the way it happens.
Well, it's understood, but inevitably somebody always says, I'd like to invoke the rule. And probably if the counsel did not invoke the rule, the judge would probably say, I'm invoking the rule. It always happens.
But somebody has to say it.
I think so. Yeah. Somebody has to say it.
I mean, that's just kind of weird. Why wouldn't it just be automatic? If you have to do it, then why wouldn't it just be automatic? Why not just say that's the way it's going to be?
Well, like with anything, there's certain exceptions. Kind of talk about what those exceptions might be. To go into a bit more detail about the rule itself, I told you about the learned treatises, how there's always different people who are experts on certain issues.
Right.
Well, the guy
and
who
so
is,
when their stuff's presented, it's just fact.
Right. Pretty much. It can be used as some sort of mind. Not. It can be used as precedent.
Right.
Or something. So the guy who is the bee's knees on evidence.
The bee's knees on evidence?
Is a guy named Wigmore.
Wigmore?
Yeah.
Is this current or is this like old England?
No, this is like 1940s.
1940s. Well, that's not current.
Well, I mean, it's more current than what you were alluding to, I believe.
Well, that's true. Yeah. More current than old England.
I can see the powdered wig looking.
Wigmore! Wigmore! Be in here, Wigmore! We need you to invoke the rule. There's no invoking going on.
He said, but when all allowances are made, it remains true that the expedient of sequestration is, and then it says next to cross-examination, one of the greatest engines that the skill of man has ever invented for the detection of liars in a court of justice. Its supreme excellence consists in its simplicity. So not to overstate it, but I mean, it's one of the main things that really goes to witness credibility.
I think that guy was a little carried away with the law there. It sounded like he fell in love with it or something.
Well, Wigmore is a strange name, and he was probably a strange dude.
Well, he probably said that, and the other people said, oh, that Wigmore, you know the way he is. Nobody listens to that. And then they made fun of each other. Hey, you hear old Jones? He pulled a Wigmore.
He's in love with those legal theories.
Pulled a Wigmore.
He's got pinups of legal theories all over his walls.
It's like Costanza. He pulled a Costanza.
What is pulling a Costanza? I can't remember now.
It was any kind of stupid thing. He got labeled with that in one of the episodes. He got labeled with that. He was trying to get that changed. He was trying to get somebody else to be the butt of the joke so they'd quit calling it a Costanza.
Oh, I think that might have been the same episode with T-Bone where he went by... He wanted to order T-Bone steak because his nickname to be T-Bone.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to change his nickname. T-Bone! He's like, no, you're look at him. He looks like a monkey. No, you're Coco the monkey boy.
Could not get T-Bone. He wanted T-Bone so bad.
Yeah. So where do you think the origins of this?
Invoking the rule?
Yeah, invoking the rule. Where do you think it comes from?
I'd have to say Old English stuff.
Old English stuff?
Yeah, because them Old English guys, they were good at invoking rules and stuff like that. We wouldn't say that nowadays.
Invoke the rule?
Yeah, invoke the rule. We wouldn't say that. We don't speak that eloquently. That's like lyrics. You listen to lyrics. The best, most eloquent lyrics come from British bands. We just have ones that are like, yeah, baby, go, go, wow, you know, and things like that. But they have multi-syllabic words that they use and they rhyme with each other and everything. They're just better with the language. They've had longer use of it.
Well, you know, it started with old Billy Shakespeare.
Yeah, old Billy. That's like I read where a guy signed up for a class with William Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the semester, he said, did you like class? He said, yeah, but I'm a little disappointed. And he said, how come? He said, well, he never showed up once.
I took a Shakespeare class in college.
You did?
Yeah. He didn't show up for that class either. But we went through different plays. And one of the things we did, we'd look at the Old English Dictionary and look up some of the different terms. And what was amazing to me is the way the words in these kind of archaic definitions connected together, which was really strange. I mean, it adds like a whole nother level of understanding to what he was writing about. So it's
I know
amazing.
There's a real beauty to the language that he wrote in. But when I listen to a Shakespearean play, mm-hmm. I have to sit there and I'm like several lines behind, mulling over what they said, trying to translate it into what I think it means. So I'm always a little bit behind trying to keep up or missing parts of it. And I've never tried to do a Shakespeare play. As many plays as I've done, I've never wanted to be in any Shakespeare plays just because I couldn't talk that way. I couldn't learn it. When I learn lines, they have to have meaning to me, and I have to understand what I'm saying. I can't understand what they're saying half the time. Now I spend so much time trying to figure it out, I'd never have time to memorize lines.
What light through yonder window breaks? What?
Yeah, somebody threw a rock through it.
What does that mean? I don't even know.
Somebody threw a rock through there.
So it actually goes back even farther than jolly old England.
Really?
It does. It goes back.
The Vikings?
Past the well.
The Minnesota Vikings?
I don't know the timetable for the Vikings, but it goes back to the Bible.
The Bible?
The Bible. And it goes back to the book of Daniel, and it's a story of Susanna, and it's in chapter 13 of the book of Daniel in the Bible.
And it reads, oh, Susanna, don't you cry for me, because I come from Alabama with a banjo on my knee. Is that right?
Exactly. There's multiple origins for this.
Yeah.
No, it has nothing to do with the story of old Susanna and the banjo on the knee.
Oh. It rained so hard the night I left, the weather it was dry. The sun so hot I nearly froze to death. Susanna, don't you cry.
So the basic story of Susanna, there's something interesting about the book of Daniel, chapter 13 as well, that I'll get into. But basically, what happened, Daniel was a famous ruler.
He could have been a yardstick, but he didn't measure up.
So basically the story goes that there were two elders that had lusted after this woman named Susanna, and she basically declined their proposition. And when she did that, they said that, well, what we're going to do is we're going to say that you had an adulterous relationship with someone else in your husband's garden, and basically therefore you were an adulteress and you should be stoned. And they said, since you didn't adulter with us, we're going to lie on you.
Or else you're going to be stoned.
Yeah, pretty much. So
so Bob Dylan had something to do with it. Huh? Everybody go get stoned.
So she was about to be convicted, and then Daniel said, and I'll read this. Are you such fools, you sons of Israel? Have you condemned a daughter of Israel without examination and without learning from the facts? And Daniel said to them, separate them from each other, and I will examine them. And when they were separated from each other, he summoned one of them and said, now then, if you really saw her, tell me this. Under what tree did you see them being intimate with each other? And he answered, under a mastic tree. Then he put him aside and commanded them to bring the other. And he said to him, now then, tell me under what tree did you catch them being intimate with each other? He answered, under an evergreen oak. Then all the assembly shouted loudly and blessed God. And they rose against the two elders, for out of their own mouths, Daniel convicted them of bearing false witness. So basically...
And then they got stoned.
They did. They got straight up killed.
Well, good for them. That's what they get for doing that.
So the one thing I need to point out that when reading about this story is that the simple fact that there were two different trees was kind of really apparent because one tree was really small and the other was like a really big tree. So it wasn't just like, well, I don't know. Maybe a mastic looks like an oak. I mean, it was apparent from what they were saying that they were, you know, vastly different trees. One was big and one was small, as the story goes.
That's what she said.
So yeah, basically they were put to death after they bore false witness against her. So, but that's the origins of this theory of invoking the rule. And it goes all the way back to, you know, the Bible, almost as far back as you can go.
Wow. That's almost like the wisdom of Solomon, huh?
Yeah, kind of. And Daniel, the interesting thing I said about this book of Daniel, and maybe we should get Charles in here to talk about this.
Oh, we wouldn't get him to stop, probably.
Charles is a biblical scholar. I think he taught himself Greek and Hebrew just so he could read the original text.
And he has a podcast where they discuss different biblical stuff.
He does with
Jim
Brosteller.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's actually how to pronounce it, but I just like his name.
Yeah.
It's a good name.
He's a good set builder, too. He helped us with our set.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know Jim, but I like his name. If you tell him I like his name.
All right, please. I'll tell him. I'll tell him, Mike likes your name.
Don't say it like that.
Mike really likes your name.
Yeah, say it like that. That's exactly the connotation I want for that. So,
he wants to know if the rest is as good.
You like the way you erected the set.
Good one, Mike.
The book of Daniel's chapter 13 and 14 are not contained in any of the Protestant Bibles. They're in the Catholic text, but not the Protestant. So weird little trivia notion there. If you go to your Bible and look for this, you might not find it because it's not in every Bible.
So it's just in the fake Catholic Bibles, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, everybody knows Catholics aren't Christians anyway.
I've been told that.
Yeah. I've been told that all my life.
So I want to get in a bit more about the rule, but I think there might be some pending motions?
Yes. If it please the court, we'd like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right. You may approach. What do we have on the docket today, Tommy?
Today, first on the docket is ZipRecruiter.
ZipRecruiter.
That's right. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Well, guess what? We're going to tell you a secret. It's ZipRecruiter.
Finding somebody who's a good fit for your company can be a real headache. It can take months and months of search, and then you end up not even getting the right person. ZipRecruiter has made all that much, much easier.
With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then, their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else.
That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours.
That's about the same as one day.
Roughly.
No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. If you don't like them, just dash left. If you like them,
swipe.
Swipe left. If you do like them, swipe right. Isn't that how that works?
I think that's something completely different.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. Don't do any swiping. Swipe or no swiping.
So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results.
And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Did you hear that, Michael?
Free?
Free, that's right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/appoint.
That's ZipRecruiter.com/appoint.
One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/appoint.
Did you say free?
Free.
Free.
Free bird. Now, Michael, next on the docket, we have DollarShaveClub.com.
I love Dollar Shave Club.
Absolutely. We ever since the first time we had dealings with Dollar Shave Club, I've been using my razors from them ever since.
You love their razors like Wigmore loves evidence.
Absolutely. And I speak highly about them. I think these razors are superior to all others in their class, and I love them with ultimate disclosure. Is that good? Here's why Dollar Shave Club is awesome. It is the smarter choice. Get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door. It's an awesome life hack and no-brainer choice. You no longer have to schlep to the store or buy a cheap disposable razor that gave you a cheap disposable shave, or spend a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech you don't need.
And let me tell you something. When I use my Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor with their Dr. Carver Shave Butter, the blade just gently glides, giving me such a smooth shave.
Smooth as a baby's butt.
Their Dr. Carver Shave Butter is transparent for a more precise shave. It helps prevent ingrown hairs and fights razor bumps. You too can make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club.
So, right now, for a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, razors are just a few bucks a month.
Did you say free shipping?
That's right. Absolutely free.
That's a $15 value for only $5. So in your first month box, you get an awesome weighty handle, a full cassette of four cartridges, and a tube of their shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price.
There are no hidden fees and no commitments. Cancel anytime you like.
You can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/court.
That's dollarshaveclub.com. I don't think so. That's dollarshaveclub.com/court. Tell them Mike and Tommy sent you.
So as I was saying, that the story of David is in the Catholic Bible, not the Protestant versions. And it's almost like they kind of sequestered this story from their Bibles.
I wonder why they kept it a secret.
I don't know. That was my one corny joke I wrote into my.
Oh, because they sequestered it away?
Yeah. Get it? It's like separated like Daniel did with the witnesses?
Yeah. Yeah, that was very clever, Mike.
Thanks.
I got that.
Thanks.
That was quite a clever joke. I was just wondering, historically, how come it wasn't included? Why do we have these Catholic ones that the Protestants don't recognize?
I think it's because that those were allegedly written in between the time between the Old Testament and the New Testament, like maybe 400 years after the Old Testament was generally written, I think.
Oh, so they thought they were forgeries, huh?
I don't know. They call them apocryphal texts or something like that.
And apox upon you text?
Apox upon you text. Not related to the groundhog.
The groundhog?
Yeah.
The groundhog pox?
Poxitani.
Oh, Poxitani Phil.
Yeah.
That's actually Punxitani, but okay, I got you.
Poxitani, is that, that's from Parks and Recreation?
I don't know. A pox upon you is a biblical wishing of ill will.
Well, anyway, I'm not a biblical scholar, so I don't know.
A biblical lawyer?
No, they did not put it in there. And there's actually, I think, 11 or 14 other chapters or books that aren't in there, too, that kind of got taken out. So
there was one part I was confused about. You said that the guy admonished them. He said, "You sons of Israel." Was that like sons of bitches that he said that?
Well, no. I think he was addressing like.
That's like, what it sounded like. "You dirty, lying, no good sons of Israel."
Well, I think he was admonishing them for their.
He knew what they were up to.
Yeah, they were basically going to stone her or kill her, basically just without taking any real evidence. Yeah. So I think he was admonishing them, but I think calling them sons of Israel is like maybe akin to saying like, "Listen, you sons of democracy or sons of America or something along those lines.
You hold yourself up like this."
Yeah, kind of like we're better than this.
Yeah, it's like one you referred to here not too long ago about when the guy comes into court with the neck brace on and you drop the heavy book back behind him, so he looks around and you can say, "There, see, he's faking it."
Got him.
Case dismissed.
That's called the Perry Mason style of lawyering.
That's right. That's the best kind.
That's the most entertaining.
Sure.
And it doesn't happen like that.
Well, that's true. Law and Order is a little different than that now.
Yeah.
That's about the closest you get to Perry Mason type stuff, I guess, since The Grinder went off.
Still haven't seen it.
That was one of my favorite shows. They canceled it after one season.
Yeah, they swiped left on it.
I know. That's pretty bad.
So...
on Grindr instead of Tinder.
This rule, invoking the rule, is actually codified in the Federal Rules of Evidence. And it's Rule 615 of the Federal Rules of Evidence. And basically, the way this rule reads, it says, "At the request of a party, the court shall order witnesses excluded so that they cannot hear the testimony of other witnesses, and it may make the order of its own motion. The rule provides for three exceptions. a party who is a natural person, an officer or employee of a party who is not a natural person designated as its representative or by its attorney, or a person whose presence is shown by a party to be essential to the presentation of his cause.
A party who is a natural person? What does that mean? You're a human being?
Yeah, so like a person. Like if you are a party to the case, you don't have to be excused from it because you are the one who is...
Oh, so if you're the defendant or something like
that? Yeah, if you're the defendant.
You have the right to be there.
Yep. And then the number two was an officer employee of a person who is not a natural person designated as its representative by its attorney. Do you know what that's for?
Corporate personhood.
Exactly. Like our own
paid attention.
Yeah, because a corporation has a right to have somebody there on its behalf too, because a corporation can't speak for itself.
Well, true. Until it becomes a person.
And then the third one, a person whose presence is shown by a party to be essential to the presentation of his cause. Whatever that means.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
I got to have that pig in here so you can look him in the eye when I tell the truth about what he done.
So the West Virginia rule is pretty much identical.
The West Virginia rule?
Yeah, to the federal rule, except it adds a fourth exception. A person the court believes should be permitted to be present. So the West Virginia rule kind of gives the court this overreaching thing to say, no, we're going to let that person in here. We don't really care.
Okay, so the judge makes that decision more or less, I guess.
Right, but you would make an argument.
Right. You would make a motion to do that or something.
The judge would have to put something on the record as to
why. One or the other, the prosecutor or the defendant.
Yeah, and the judge would have to put something on the record as to why the court believes that person should be present. So.
All right.
So, who can the rule apply to? And we already talked about the rule itself. It can apply to parties, including a representative of a corporate party, but they cannot, that's one of the exceptions, they cannot be sequestered. However, in some civil cases, when a plaintiff or defendant elects to call their witnesses before testifying themselves, the court may require that party to testify prior to the testimony of their witnesses, or that they be excluded from the courtroom prior to the time that they testify. So there are some exceptions there.
Well, I can understand that because maybe there's a timeline involved. And if the guy that's on trial got to hear the other witnesses give their account of the timeline, he might adjust his to match up with them or something.
Yeah.
So you might want to have him go ahead and testify and give his timeline, and then when they go, then they don't have the chance to adjust theirs.
Right. And they're kind of like, I like what that guy's saying. I think I might change my testimony a little bit.
He's got a good idea there.
So but this does not work, that having them testify in different order does not work in criminal cases, and that's for several reasons. The first one is that you can't force a defendant to testify in criminal cases. You remember that?
Correct. That's the Fifth Amendment.
Correct. So basically...
And most of the time, if they're guilty, they won't testify anyway.
No.
Yeah, that's what, when they say they won't take the stand, that's because they're guilty.
No. That's exactly 100%.
Well, I know you're not supposed to assume that, but that's just like, that's just like they say when the judge says, the jury will strike the last statement. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. You can tell me I didn't hear it and it doesn't count, but I still heard it.
They take care of that. They answer that question and ask you that question during voir dire when you're selecting a jury.
Mm-hmm.
They'll ask you, as you understand, as this defendant sits right here, that he or she is innocent. You understand that, right?
And you snicker and say, yeah, right.
And if they cannot be compelled to testify, and it's up to the state to prove their case.
Right.
They can elect not to testify, and you may not hold that against them if they don't testify. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's the way it's supposed to work.
Not mine. Yeah, I'd strike you from my jury right away.
Well, that's my goal. I can't afford to go to jury duty.
But if you make a defendant...
And I know there's a lot of people out there say you need to go to jury duty, and they want to go to jury duty, and they wish they got selected for jury duty, and that's okay. You could have that opinion. I don't want to go.
So if you made the defendant testify first before all the other witnesses, they may not want to testify. So you really are kind of changing the whole criminal procedure thing. So
yeah, I can understand that because then but then they have the ability to sit there and listen to everything and then decide based on what the other say whether they want to or not.
Well, now here's something that you're going to like, and this was from a case in 2000 called Portuando v. Agard, and it was a U.S. Supreme Court case.
Mm-hmm.
Prosecutors commented to the jury on the fact that the defendant heard all the other testimony before coming onto the stand themselves. And basically insinuating that they tailored their testimony to conform to what was testified in court. So they said that in their closing argument.
Okay.
And the Supreme Court, in a 7-2 decision, basically said that that was fine. You're allowed to do that. And Justice Scalia wrote the opinion, and he said, allowing comment upon the fact that a defendant's presence in the courtroom provides him a unique opportunity to tailor his testimony is appropriate and sometimes essential to the central function of the trial, which is to discover the truth. The state can comment on the fact that he sat there and heard all this, and basically then he testified.
Well, I don't understand how you say that's a good thing, because if they're tailoring it, then that means they're changing it.
No, but
saying what they think people want to hear.
Allowing the prosecutor to comment on the fact that he did that.
Oh, so they're saying it's all right that he commented on that?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, I thought that you're saying on whatever the ruling was, or about him testifying and tailoring his thing. They're saying it was all right that he said this guy probably tailored his and put some doubt in their mind or whatever?
Exactly. Basically to undermine his credibility as a witness by saying that, look, he sat here and listened to all these people say this is how it happened.
I agree.
And now he's testifying.
I misunderstood what you're saying that they were ruling on.
No, that's why I said, you're going to like this one.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought, but then I didn't understand it. See, that just shows you how far behind I am.
You're a hanging podcaster.
I'm a hanging podcaster. That's right.
I don't know. I'm going to move to strike that.
It's already been rung. You can't unring the bell.
One interesting thing about criminal cases and parties is that victims were not traditionally viewed as a party to a criminal case, since the plaintiff is the state and the defendant is essentially charged with violating the laws of that particular state. So therefore, the victim, like any other witness, was traditionally not allowed in a courtroom during a trial because they were going to be a witness and you didn't want to prejudice what they were going to say by hearing the other witnesses testify.
So, like, say you were a shop owner and some guy broke in with a gun and shot you and robbed you, mm-hmm. and you lived, though.
Yep.
So then what you're saying is the state is going to prosecute them for armed robbery or whatever.
Right, because it's against the law of the state to...
So it's not you doing it. It's a state. You didn't press charges.
Yeah.
The state arrested them and they're pressing charges. So you're, in effect, no more than a witness.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. You're a witness to the crime against the state.
I can follow that.
That was the theory, but now it's kind of changed a little bit, and victims have more and more say in cases and courts have held recently that the victim has an absolute right to be present during a trial. So that's kind of a change over the years that they're going to that. So a lot of times,
I don't know if I agree with that.
I think for someone's psychological well-being, being a victim of something like that, it's probably a good idea to have them in the courtroom to let them kind of cope with things and deal with it and move on with their life. Mm-hmm. And if really the underlying goal of our criminal justice system is to have a society where people are unaffected by crime, or, you know, that's our utopian goal, then maybe it is a good idea to have them in there if it helps them cope with things and deal with things.
But well, I suppose so.
At the same time, as a criminal defense attorney, I don't think I like them in there because they can hear everything everybody else says and then say whatever they want to say.
I don't know. I'm mixed on that one.
I've never seen you not have a strong opinion about something with regards to criminal law.
Well, I'm thinking about that on the other side. If they were able to stay in there and listen, and they could hear maybe the guy had cohorts, you know, and maybe they're all making up this other story about him having a gun and everything. And then if he knew about that, you know, it wasn't self-defense. I didn't have a gun, you know, things like that. Then he would be better prepared to tell the real story. But I don't know. I guess you should know the real story, whether you know what they said or not.
Yeah, pretty much.
So just disregard that.
So that's with regard to fact witnesses. Now, there's other kinds of witnesses called expert witnesses.
Or alternative fact witnesses?
No. We don't deal with alternative fact witnesses.
Okay.
So basically, an expert witness is somebody who is called to not comment on what actually took place, but they give their opinion as an expert based on a certain set of circumstances. Like, for example, if you had like a negligence case and a slip and fall case, and you were alleging that there was inadequate lighting in this hallway where this person slipped and fell, and it was negligent for them to have the hallway so dim, you might hire an expert witness who would come in and test the lighting in there and tell you how many lumens it is and determine whether or not that was up to the safety code or not. So okay. That's something like an expert witness would do.
You know what an expert is?
What's that?
It's a spurt that quit, so now it's an expert.
That took me way too long to kind of process that. A pert that quit, now it's an expert.
It's a spurt.
A spurt.
And it quit, so now it's an expert.
Okay. And generally, expert witnesses are not, since they're not in court to say what did or did not happen, they're usually allowed to be in the courtroom during testimony. So the rule generally doesn't apply to them, because what someone else says during the trial is not really going to affect what they're talking about, because they're not there to say, like, you know, what took place. They're there to give an opinion about something.
Right.
So it's kind of different.
So they're just ruling, they're like, you have DNA experts that come in and talk about this is why the DNA matched or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, a DNA expert, he's going to talk about the DNA. He's not going to talk about whether or not this guy was at the gas station at 10:02 shooting somebody or not.
Or a blood splatter yeah. expert.
Like Dexter?
Yeah. He usually makes the blood splatter.
So the one.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert. They won't give that away.
He's a serial killer. Yeah, I don't want to give away
he's a serial. No, don't tell anybody. They might not have seen it yet.
You learned that pretty daggone quick, I think.
I already got admonished for giving away the ice cream truck killer.
Did somebody admonish you for that? Or was that me?
And I'm like, that came out 5 years ago. You hadn't seen it in 5 years. And
Dexter?
You know, yeah.
Oh, it's more than 5 years, isn't it?
Well, that episode, though, I think, well, it might be more than 5 years old.
That was in the first season.
I was thinking it was the second season, but I know it was way back there. But somebody said they just started watching it, and I'd spoiled it for them. They were like a few episodes short of that part, and I spoiled it for them. I'm like, catch up, dude. When did that start, like 2005 or something?
Speaking of spoilers, what do you think about Game of Thrones? Just kidding. Not going to go there.
I was going to say, which part?
So
the part where Arya killed Jon Snow? Is that what you mean?
I know. Didn't see that coming. Talking about expert witnesses, though, this came back to somebody who was, we had talked about in this podcast before, Gary Gilmore.
Yeah.
Remember him?
I remember him. He's got executed.
Yep.
He was shot at a Utah firing squad.
Yeah. He was charged in Utah with killing several people.
Right.
And he desperately wanted his girlfriend at trial. And because he was so manic and so, like, unable to proceed to trial without her being there, it was like she was his support, essentially. And so that was his argument, that she needed to be there. And the state, whether or not she had anything to do with the case or not, listed her as a witness. So basically she couldn't be in the courtroom with him during the trial. And actually the court allowed her in there for support for him so he could be there to stand trial.
Oh, so that had to be an argument about it, huh?
Yeah, they argued about that. And then, as you said, spoiler alert, just like the elders in the Susanna story, he was sentenced to death and executed.
So. Yeah. Well, and he petitioned to be executed.
He did,
once he was sentenced to death, he wanted to be executed. He wanted to go by firing squad.
He was a strange cat.
Yeah, he was. Well, he was in and out of the prison pretty much his whole life.
Yeah. So these rules generally apply to discovery as well, which we've talked on discovery before. And so, for example, if you were taking someone's deposition, and a deposition is basically where you just take someone's testimony outside the presence of the court, but with the other attorney there in front of a court reporter. So you're basically just taking their testimony.
I have been deposed before.
Yeah. Well, I figured you might have. I mean, it's not uncommon for somebody to be deposed. What was your case about?
Well, several times when I was in with the railroad, when I had to investigate injuries mm-hmm. that happened, and then the employee would sue the railroad over their injury.
Yep.
And so if I was the investigating officer, then I had to be deposed for the civil case involved in him suing the railroad.
Yeah. What'd you think about it, being deposed?
I always felt like that the lawyer representing, you know, the injured employee, his goal was to sit there and try to make me look like I didn't know how to do my job.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, all I did was go out and investigate, see what happened, interview people, you know, gather whatever information I could. And yet he would want to get into about rules. How well did I know about this rule? What did I know about this rule? How many times had I failed people for things, you know, stuff like that. And I wanted to say, hey, it's not about me. You know, to me, it was like the same thing as they talk about when rape victims go in there as a witness. And then they put the rape victim on trial when it's supposed to be the rapist.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt the same way. Hey, I wasn't the one that went out there and shut my hand in a door. You know, why are you getting on me about this? This guy did it in the middle of the night. I was home in bed. I had to wake up and go look at it.
Yeah. I just came out and took pictures of a bloody stump laying there on the railroad track. I don't know what you're talking about. So yeah, depositions I've done a lot of them. Been to a lot of depositions. Usually it's one side asking a lot of questions, the other side just sitting there kind of objecting periodically. Objectiform.
Yeah, the lawyer representing me never really did much of anything.
Yeah, probably made a few objections. And if he screwed up something pretty bad, he might have had to try to, like, well, when you said this, didn't you really mean this?
or sometimes he would say, that's not part of his job duties. He's not answering that.
Yeah.
When it came to certain types of questions.
It's pretty rare that you tell somebody not to answer during a deposition. Usually you just go ahead and let them answer and then just it's not admissible. So,
well, what there were standard things that they tried to do, the union, you know, the lawyers representing the union side of it, that were basically discrediting safety rules and certain operating rules because they felt like they were catch-22s.
Yeah.
They were ones. It's like this. If you get injured, you obviously did something to injure yourself or you wouldn't be injured. So the fact you have an injury proves you violated a rule. So they would take the opposite course on that, trying to prove that these rules mean nothing. They just simply are a way to hang somebody for having gotten hurt.
Yeah.
So it's a standoff.
Pretty much. So what I was saying basically is that the rule, invoking the rule, pretty much applies to discovery as well, that you can't have other witnesses sitting there during a deposition, because at the same time, that could influence their recollection of events as well.
So, sure.
Even though they're not giving their testimony right then, they might get a glimpse behind the curtain as to how that person's going to testify, and then they might change their testimony. So it's just better not to have them in there, I think, in general. I agree with that pretty much.
Absolutely. I'll agree with that, too.
So
we're all in agreement. Everybody out of the room.
Now, this is in the room where it happens. So this case I came across was when I was looking at this invoking the rule during discovery, mm-hmm. and it really doesn't have a ton to do with our topic. I mean, it has like a little bit to do, but this case had to do with discovery and whether or not the people were allowed to have access to discovery. The case was called, I didn't actually write down the case name, but I believe it was called Adams v. Metallica, Inc.
Metallica?
Metallica, Inc.
Really?
Yeah. So this case involved a plaintiff named Keith Phillips and Metallica, the band, and Phillips had sustained some serious injuries while at a Metallica concert at the Riverbend Music Center in Ohio.
Cincinnati, that's where we were to see the Buffett.
Yep. So now this is where it gets really good. According to witnesses, Phillips, whose nickname was Crazy Indian, had repeatedly volunteered to be launched into the air above the heads of 30 fans. Oh, I'm sorry. Launched into the air above the heads of fans that had congregated for that purpose in the lawn area. The group, approximately 30 fans, was expected to catch the person launched once that person assumed horizontal position above their heads.
How was he going to be launched? Was he in a cannon?
No, they were throwing him up in the air.
Throwing him up in the air?
Yeah.
30 feet? Oh, 30 people.
Yeah. So, according to friends, Phillips, who was already intoxicated, started to act more erratically after drinking from a mysterious blue bottle being passed around the crowd.
That mysterious blue bottle will get you every time.
After several successful launches, Phillips decided to attempt another launch, this time imitating another participant he had seen perform a mid-air somersault.
Oh, so now he's getting fancy. He's made it. He survived a few times, even though he's drunk on his ass.
Yep.
And he's made it back to Earth safely. Now he's going to do it, and he's going to add a full gainer that he's not qualified to do.
He had some blue drank.
Yeah.
So
it was Drano.
Unfortunately, or once airborne, Phillips tucked his body and went into an uncontrolled spin above the crowd. Unfortunately, Phillips did not come out of the spin in time. Instead of catching him, the other participants, fearing for their safety, parted and allowed Phillips, still spinning, to fall headfirst to the ground.
And at that point, he drilled into the core at the center of the earth as he continued to rotate.
Yeah, it actually became paraplegic
as a result of it. Oh, man.
Yeah. So, Adams was another guy at that concert, and evidently he was moshing at he wasn't at that concert, he was at a different concert, but it was a Metallica concert, and he was injured at an Indiana concert. So what he wanted to do was he wanted to get that deposition, that discovery from this other Metallica case, so he could have access to it. And so basically the courts were like, no, you don't have a right to do that. So,
well, why would that help him? Just because he got beat up in the mosh pit and this other fool got himself launched into outer space and came down into the ground.
Well, I mean, you could basically show that the entire Metallica concert was just like a circus of rule breaking and nonconformity and negligent acts, and that nobody was there to rule things in. And it was basically just a danger zone.
And how about you just say that everybody that went there knew that's what it was, and that's why they went?
Yeah, that's the old assumption of the risk argument.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So. Well, that, like I said, doesn't really have much to do with invoking the rule, but I came across that when I was reading it, and I thought that this case is too good to not talk about.
Anything that has to do with Metallica, huh?
And a mysterious blue bottle.
Yeah.
And some guy with the nickname Crazy Indian. This is, I mean, just, it's a crazy case.
Man.
So, well, so now you know what it means to invoke the rule.
Yes, now I know what it means. So now I won't think anything strange is going on if I hear somebody say in a court case they want to invoke the rule.
And it's actually...
I'm going to stand up and say, I second that.
It's different than the golden rule.
Yeah.
Do you know what the golden rule is?
Yeah, don't pee on anybody unless you want them to pee on you.
Probably somewhere that is actually on a wall written as the golden rule. But for purposes of legal...
do unto issues, others as you would have them do unto you.
No, that's not it, actually.
That's not it?
No, it's something completely different.
Well, I don't know.
You're going to have to tune in next time to hear. It's the beginning of the next episode.
And then we're going to invoke the golden rule?
I'll tell you what the golden rule is. But it's
then I have to kill you.
Anyway, that brings us to...
Legal briefs.
Legal briefs is the part of the show where we go over different topics and terms that we talked about. And I usually ask Tommy if he remembers what they meant. And sometimes he asks me if I know something that he said what it meant. And usually I don't. So
no, I didn't even know what we were going to talk about today till we already fired up the mics.
I know. I sequestered you from the topic.
Boy, I'll say I had no idea what it was or where we were going.
It's called method podcasting.
Method podcasting, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, because you practiced what this episode was, huh?
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Now
we found out I'm guilty.
What is invoking the rule?
Invoking the rule means that any witnesses have to be sequestered from the court while the testimony is taking place from other witnesses.
And what is the purpose of that?
To keep from influencing people's testimony.
Yeah. Now, where did this theory of invoking the rule originate?
Well, you see, it originated back in the Catholic Bible of Daniel.
The Catholic Bible of Daniel?
But the one who really loved it was Wigmore. He married it later. He changed the law to where you could marry an inanimate object, and he married the invoking the rule law.
Much to the chagrin of the Pope, he married...
an inanimate object.
It comes from the book of Daniel, chapter 13, in the story of... Old Susanna.
Old Susanna, don't you cry for me, or I'll stone you outside underneath a big old tree. Made that one up on the fly.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you which Bible it was in, but you already know the answer to that one because you just went into that.
Yeah.
It's in the Catholic Bible, not the Protestant Bible.
That's right. So. They didn't get that. Edition.
So the last thing is, what is a deposition?
A deposition is when they come and they interview someone that may be a witness, and he usually has a lawyer with him, and then there's a lawyer against him, and they depose him for the facts that he has concerning this case.
That's pretty much describing it, but the one important thing that you left out was
before the trial.
Generally before the trial, but it's sworn testimony. And it's always before a court reporter.
All right.
So sometimes they can be video.
It's just the same as being in a court, but you're not really in a court.
There's no judge.
Right.
It's just, you know, lawyers
asking. Just taking your statement. And then if they want to submit your deposition instead of you as a witness, they can submit it. And if they don't want to, they don't have to.
Well, they can, but you have to be unavailable. There's a whole different thing about that.
You have to be unavailable?
Yeah. Like if you die, then they can bring in your deposition.
Oh.
But really another good thing too is like you can't change your story. So if you change your story about something that happened, then they can impeach you with that prior testimony.
Well, I always felt like that they looked at it to decide whether it was worth calling you as a witness or not.
That too. They might. That's like more of a...
And they look, they say, this guy didn't bring anything to our case. We don't want him.
Yeah, that's like a pure discovery deposition. So
right.
Maybe we should get into deposition sometime.
Well, maybe so. I had one other thing that I was going to bring up from our pals graph and the exploding Italians.
Yeah.
We talked about in there the different faults, and it said that there's no more accidents anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's responsible for something. And I said, you see people being charged now for things that 20 years ago they wouldn't have been charged for. This week, I saw an article that came out that I thought was very indicative of that. It said, prosecutors have filed criminal charges against a sheriff's detective in Central California accused of killing his colleague in what authorities had initially called a tragic and accidental shooting. It seems that these two officers, one with 20 years experience, one with 10 years, were in the office and they were going over how to carry a backup weapon, procedures in carrying a backup weapon. Mm-hmm. And one of the officers accidentally discharged his gun and shot the other officer in the chest, killing him.
Oh, man.
So, you know, there was no fight going on. It wasn't like they were horse playing. They weren't out doing something they weren't supposed to do. You know, they both were, you know, friends. And this gun goes off and somebody dies. And now we're charging them, not just civilly. I could understand civilly, you know, the family saying somebody's responsible for this. We want money for it. But he's being charged criminally for involuntary manslaughter or something to that effect.
Well, there could be a reason. And I'm just thinking out just quickly why they might do that, given that set of circumstances. There could be something in their insurance policy that basically they don't have to cover anything if it was some sort of criminal act. So that could be an in run around having to pay insurance on it. They charge them with a criminal act, so there's not going to be an insurance claim because it's not covered under the insurance policy.
Man, but unless you're looking to get the guy, why would you do that? You're ruining him for his career, you know, and his life. Are you going to send him to prison?
It's all about the Benjamins.
Man, but I just couldn't believe that. I mean, that like that would take place. I mean, if there were suspicious circumstances or something, you know, they're out somewhere and a gun goes off and one of them was seeing the other one's wife or something like that. Now I could see where you're going down a path. But this was in the middle of an office and two guys that were friends and they were just going over a procedure and a bad accident happened.
I tend to look
at
things.
There are no accidents anymore.
I tend to look at things from the bottom line, the money issue. And I bet insurance has something to do with that.
Well, that could be. It's a sad state of affairs. Like I say, I can understand a civil trial, but a criminal one, I don't understand that.
Look at the insurance policy. I bet it's got some sort of thing that doesn't cover criminal acts.
It's like they always say, follow the money.
Follow the money.
If you want to get to the root of it, follow the money. It's all about the Benjamins.
Thanks to everybody for listening. And thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Sprung. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.